The following presentation is from North Pine Baptist Church. We trust that it will help you learn more about God and His message for the world. For more information and to connect with us, visit npbc.org.au.
Thank you for your attendance tonight. Two apologies. First of all, I'm not a technological guru. I'm a technological dinosaur. So for those who came along expecting some whiz-bang PowerPoint presentation, alas, they will remain empty and blank. My only ability is to produce some handouts, which I hope you have with you at the moment. That is the pinnacle of my technological achievement. The second apology is, and Bill adverted to this, is that the topic is very large and it's important that we adequately deal with it rather than rush through it and leave a lot of questions unanswered. So what I propose to do is not to deal with the very important topic tonight of the religious discrimination bills which are currently before the federal parliament, but to look at how we have the religious freedom that we have and how at present those freedoms have been eroded. So let's deal with the past, the present, and leave the future until another day. This is not going to be a legal talk, by the way. If you want a legal talk with lots of references and case law and all that, you'll have to come back tomorrow night. That's a joke, by the way. Israel Folau is a Christian Australian with Tongan parents and family. He was born in Minto in New South Wales. Nick Farr-Jones, if you're a follower of rugby, one of the greatest Australian rugby captains, described Folau as probably the best player of this generation, the best rugby player of this generation. Not only has he played rugby, he played NRL. In fact, he was a member of the Broncos the last time they won, which was quite a while ago. He also played for the AFL for Greater Western Sydney. He has scored more tries in the Super Rugby competition than any other player, and he has been a member of the Wallabies, and I know it's got a 3 and a 7 in it. It's either 73 tests or 37. Either way, he's a prolific scorer and a brilliant player. He's never had as many players of all three codes have fallen foul of the judiciary in either on-field or off-field misbehaviour. So Folau has never, for example, been accused of domestic violence towards his wife or any other person. He's never kicked his pregnant wife in the stomach whilst she was on the ground. He's never been out in public fighting. He's never drunk in public. He's never taken drugs of any kind, either performance enhancing or illicit drugs. This is in stark contrast to a lot of other players who have done exactly that. Yet, for reasons best known to the code, the codes in which they play, they have been accepted back into the code and are able to play after their misbehaviour, and they have continued to play. Folau's sin, if it is such a thing, or his transgression was that he quoted from the Bible in an off-field tweet, I think the word is. I believe it was Instagram, so if that's a tweet, I'll say it's a tweet. Anyway, he posted something on social media which went like this. Those that are living in sin... He said this. This is the quote that he was... He used the paraphrase of 1 Corinthians 6, verses 9 to 10, where he said, basically, that people who sinned in various ways, and these included adulterers, idolaters, fornicators, drunkards, murderers, homosexuals, extortioners and others, were headed for hell. Then he repeated it by saying that, and I quote, those that are living in sin will end up in hell unless you repent. Jesus Christ loves you and is giving you time to turn away from your sin and come to him. Of course, the last part is largely ignored by his detractors. As a result of that, he was compelled to attend a code of conduct hearing before an ARU, code of conduct panel. Coincidentally, all of them were not... He didn't have any say in who was on this, but it was the three members were appointed by the ARU. And he, on the day before the federal election, Friday, May the 18th, he was found guilty of a breach of the code of conduct, and he was stripped of his $4 million playing contract and ordered to leave the Wallabies. He was found to have offended large sections of the community and rugby supporters by this tweet, and had acted against the values of Rugby Australia, which promotes gender equality, diversity and inclusivity. He was even charged on social media by various other postees, I believe the word is, posters, with promoting hate speech against homosexuals in those tweets. Strangely, and this is coming from an unlikely source, he was defended against that charge of hate speech by a person, a very famous, or in some cases infamous, Australian philosopher by the name of Peter Singer. Peter Singer was at one stage, and until just recently, a professor of philosophy at Harvard, but he's regarded as one of the black sheep of the Australian philosophical community and the academic community because he promotes, amongst other things, bestiality as a valid sexual choice and as a valid way of living your life. Apart from that, he obviously is no friend of Christians and Christian beliefs. Yet Singer said that what Folau had said was not hate speech. In fact, he characterised it as the exact opposite. He said it was love speech because Folau was showing concern for, rather than attempting to engender hatred in the people that he'd listed, including homosexuals, and was concerned enough about them to ask them or plead with them to change their ways, to turn to Christ, so that they would avoid the being sent to hell for their sins. So that's a very interesting reaction from somebody who is obviously no friend of Christians and Christian belief. Can I also refer you to your handout, one of my concessions to technology? There is a section there quoted, which is section 351, subsection 1 of the Fair Work Act, which is a Commonwealth piece of legislation, which it says very clearly, and I would have thought it applies directly and explicitly to people in Folau's position, an employer must not take adverse action against a person who is an employee or prospective employee of the employer because of the person's, and there's a whole range of things that don't apply to him, religion. Despite that, the ARU found that he was guilty of the breach of the code of conduct, and as a result terminated his contract and, in effect, dismissed him as an employee. Not surprisingly, Folau turned down the offer to have that review or that decision of the panel reviewed by another panel also appointed by the ARU, and has started action in the federal court for, amongst other things, breach of contract and discrimination against him as an employee on the basis of his religion and his religious beliefs. And that particular case, as far as I know, is due to be heard in early February next year. So that's where we're at the moment. You may also have heard just recently that Margaret Court, one of the greatest tennis players probably this country has ever produced, man or woman, and one of the greatest tennis players in the world, man or woman, in the open or amateur era, there was some kerfuffle about her name being stripped from the Margaret Court Arena at the Australian Tennis Centre in Melbourne because she has been a trenchant critic of same-sex marriage. Now, it baffles me as to the connection between her greatness as a tennis player and her recognition by means of a stadium or arena being named after her and her beliefs, her Christian beliefs, as to same-sex marriage and homosexuality. The connection, or the lack of connection, just baffles me. However, that is a symptom of the world in which we live, which we will examine in a little while. So, what is this thing we talk about as the freedom of religion? If I can just go delve a little bit into legalities, and it's not the nasty stuff, I prefer to call it the freedom or right of religion and belief, because not everybody, as we know, adheres to a set of religious beliefs. However, most people have a core set of beliefs or a worldview which they adhere to and build their lives upon. And that includes, of course, people who do not have any kind of a belief in a supernatural being, and so that would include an atheist or even an agnostic. Freedom of religion and belief is one of a range of and a raft of freedoms and liberties which have been developed mainly in the English-speaking common law world over a considerable period of time and often through great suffering to its proponents. Other freedoms which sort of intersect with and exist side by side with this freedom include the freedom of association, freedom of speech, and freedom of being able to hold their own political views. Now, having said that, of course, these views and these freedoms are not open-ended. There are obvious limitations to them, and in exercising those rights or freedoms, for example, no crime should be committed. You can't, in exercising a right of freedom or belief, commit a crime. You can't defame people and pull them down in the public pull down their reputation in the public sphere. You're not able to promote violence or counsel others to take matters violently into their own hands. That's obvious. But given those things aside, a person should be able to exercise their right of freedom and belief without any trammels or restrictions on their exercise. And that's been a very clearly set out not only in our common law, but in various pronouncements of, for example, the United Nations. If I can refer you to my piece of technological wizardry, there are seven components of religious freedom and belief which have been identified by, amongst other things, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights of the United Nations and the International Covenant for Political and Civil Rights. And these include a freedom to read scripture or a person's holy books in public, a freedom to interpret scriptures or their holy books without government interference or input, freedom of worship, freedom to choose or change your faith or belief, freedom to establish places of worship, freedom to preach and try to convince others of the truth of your beliefs, even in public, and freedom from being required to affirm a certain worldview or set of beliefs in order to hold a public sector job, stand for election to public office, work in certain professions, or even study at university. And as we shall see, a lot of that last right has been eroded in a very subtle way in various cases which have come before the courts and tribunals in the past. Now, you may say, well, we have constitutions, we have a Commonwealth constitution, we have state constitutions. Don't these documents, which are the foundations of our government, law, legislation, and the three sectors of government, the executive, the legislature, and the judiciary, doesn't that guarantee our freedom of worship and belief? Wrong answer, unfortunately, it doesn't. I'd like to read you a foreword from the interim report of the report of the Parliament of the Commonwealth, the Joint Standing Committee on Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade, otherwise known as the Ruddock Report. And the chairman said this, and I'll read it in its entirety because it's very well set out. The right to freedom of religion, thought, conscience or belief is one of the pillars of our liberty. Many Australians are descended from people who fled persecution for their faith. Early European settlers came from Protestant, Catholic and Lutheran traditions. Orthodox Christians, Muslims, Hindus, Jews, Buddhists and many others have found freedom, that is religious and freedom of belief, here too. Aboriginal people continue to practice their indigenous faith traditions. And people with no religious adherence, including atheists, live free from coercion or persecution by religious authorities. However, Australia's strong record of religious freedom should not be taken for granted. Legal protection of religious freedom in Australia is limited. Australia is unusual among modern Western democracies in that it lacks a codified bill or charter of rights, as, for example, it exists in the United States and Canada. While a culture of religious freedom has thrived and the common law has largely respected religious freedom, the legislative framework to ensure its continuation is vulnerable. Most significantly, there is almost no explicit protection for religious freedom at the Commonwealth level. The Constitution does place fetters on the Commonwealth government, preventing it from restricting religious practice to some extent, but this is a fairly narrow protection and does not provide a positive protection of the right, nor does it prevent the states and territories from restricting religion. So, it's not as clear-cut as we think. We have this very strong tradition and history of religious freedom, tolerance, freedom of belief, but there aren't the legal underpinnings for it. And the chairman is making the point here that this makes our right to religious freedom and belief vulnerable. Let's look now, if I may, to, again to your handout, the only reference to religious freedom in the Commonwealth Constitution is section 116, which is in that handout. The Commonwealth shall not make any law for establishing any religion, or for imposing any religious observance, or for prohibiting the free exercise of any religion, and no religious test shall be required as a qualification for any office or public trust under the Commonwealth. So it only prohibits the Commonwealth from making laws with respect to those things. It explicitly prohibits any restraint or law being made which restrains the free exercise of any religion. And of course that can be the Christian religion, the Muslim religion, the Buddhist, the Hindu, anybody. So that's at least something, and it answers or meets one of the seven components of the freedom of religion that I mentioned to you earlier. The big question, of course, is this. You may ask this. Well, why don't the states have any guarantee of freedom of worship and belief? There's seven of that. Well, there's seven states and two territories. Why don't they have a guarantee in their constitutions? Well, the fact is they don't. And the reason for that is very interesting. You see, this is a bit of a sidetrack, hopefully not a rabbit hole, but it explains a lot of the way things are. Australia does not have an Australian government, an Australian government. We are constantly having this pushed at us in ads, authorised by the Australian government, Department of Human Services, Canberra. Well, there's no Australian government. There is a Commonwealth government, or the government of the Commonwealth of Australia, or the federal government, because Australia is a federation. And a federation means simply that there were six or seven states originally, and to create a Commonwealth which had powers in common which were best administered by a central government, a Commonwealth government, they gave powers to the Commonwealth. But they kept most of them themselves. And so what happened was that the Commonwealth only took up this very limited power regarding religion, which is set out in section 116. Really, the power to a provision which prohibits the restraint on the free exercise of any religion. The rest of it is in the hands of the state. Now, this provides a bit of a problem for the Commonwealth if it wishes to make laws with respect to religious freedom and belief. Because under the Constitution, section 51, certain powers are specifically given to the Commonwealth. And these include such obvious things as defence, foreign affairs, customs and excise, meteorology, all sorts of things. However, it was never given the power to regulate and guarantee freedom of religion. That was left to the states. And there's a very good reason for that, because everybody thought Well, we don't need it. The states aren't going to restrict and prohibit the free exercise of the right of religion. That came from England. Everybody knew that. We're the inheritors of the English common law. We're all good blokes. Nobody's going to do that. But of course, the world has changed. And in very significant ways, and for very significant reasons. Because what you've got, one of the things that underpinned or was the foundation of the Constitution and the Federation when it was first formed, was that there was a general Christian agreement or orthodoxy in the Australian community. Most people were Christians, and they either were Catholics or Protestants of various types and denominations. There were a few other religions represented, but by and large it was a Christian orthodoxy. Just our one fascinating examples. For example, there have been Muslim people practicing in Australia since at least the 1870s and 80s. And they were the Afghan camel drivers who came across, brought across by the South Australian government, which of course then included the Northern Territory, to build the Overland Telegraph Line. And they were the ones who brought the camels and brought the supplies and water up the what was called the Overland Telegraph Line, and later the building of the North-South Railway, which is commemorating by being called the GAN, hence the name. So, but of course, since then, since the time of Federation, the general, what I would call Christian orthodoxy or Christian majority has been eroded by a whole lot of factors. And I could bore you with a whole lot of details, but you know what they are. Marxian, atheistic Marxian socialism, modernism and postmodernism, and relativism in morals and ethics, the influence of two world wars, the sexual and cultural revolution of the 60s, the rise of secular humanism, Darwinian evolutionary thought, liberalism in the churches, textual criticism in the churches, which has attacked the inerrancy of the Holy Bible, and the entry of other religions, particularly Eastern religions and those based on Eastern religions such as Hare Krishna, and the growth, the legitimate growth, of religions from other countries. And so the Christian orthodoxy, which was assumed by the founders of the Constitution and the people who ruled in that early period, was assumed to continue forever. But it, of course, it hasn't. And so what you've got is an orthodoxy which is no longer predominantly Christian. So, in effect, Australia has become a society with a plurality of ideas. Australians can stroll through a bewilderingly diverse marketplace of ideas, beliefs and worldviews. Now, there are some who would say, oh, well, you know, that's a terrible thing. Well, I don't think that, actually. I think that we live in a free and liberal society. We're able to choose which of the worldviews and belief systems that we choose. It's up to us. That's a political decision or a personal decision which has political ramifications. People can even choose, as I said before, a belief system which doesn't have or recognise any supernatural element at all. That's okay. It's part of the right of religion, a part of the freedom of religion and beliefs. It's as it should be. And we should be able to enjoy that particular right as Christians or any other religion. The only thing that I would put as a caveat to that is that all religions and belief systems should be able to hold and express their views and beliefs in the same way as others do. Nobody should be jumped on for holding a particular belief, unless, of course, they transgress some of those restrictions that I mentioned. Do they commit crimes? Do they incite violence? Do they counsel and procure others to promote violence? Do they defame others? Things like that. Do they stir up hatred against others? These are legitimate boundaries to the exercise of this very important freedom. However, of course, since in addition to those other very, very, those general forces and currents which I mentioned, which have reduced the Christian orthodoxy since the time of Federation, there are some very, very specific and dangerous trends that are going on in our society today. And I could go into great detail, but I'll pick and choose a couple. One of them is what's called secular humanism. And again, I emphasise, and please don't think that I'm saying that secular humanists have no right to express or hold their beliefs. However, it goes a little beyond that. They aggressively push their ideas in various subtle ways. For example, they create tolerance of their views and ideas which are explicitly contrary to the norms, values, and beliefs of a Christian society, a Judeo-Christian society and ethic, and a lot of other religions, I might add, as well. They pressure the authorities and society, particularly government bodies, until humanistic beliefs and behaviour are given equality with the pre-existing norms of society. And they seek to reverse the norms and values of society so that Christianity is made to appear foolish, backward, evil, and a threat to human progress. And then they go in one step further and they work to make the previous norms of the formerly Christian society or faith-based societies illegal. And one of the things that you might have heard about is the so-called Safe Schools program in New South Wales, in Victoria, where they push this idea that children, even from an early age, can choose their identity, and they support them in doing so, and even sometimes without the consent of the parents, give lessons in this ideology in the classrooms to very young children. Now, that defies logic, in my opinion, and should be categorised as some form of child abuse. But it's not, of course, because there's this program and they are very cunning and forceful and resourceful in creating these things and sliding them in under the radar, and so that people think, oh, yeah, well, that's all right. Of course we want these children who have doubts as to their sexuality to be accepted, but of course it goes further than that. That's just the thin end of the wedge. Very dangerous stuff. Then there is, amongst other things, the move for what we call political correctness. And this is based on the ideas pushed for what's called gender identity. So you can't criticise or you can't talk against or express your disagreement with these ideas. It goes even further than that, because what they are doing is that they are in effect dividing society into favoured and less favoured groups. So this, instead of society promoting society as a coherent whole where people have common values, work together for the common good. Oh no. What they do is they say, well, there are favoured groups and there are less favoured groups. And the favoured groups are those who have been deemed to have been oppressed in some way in the past. Now, whether they have been or not, that's a moot point. And they include, for example, women, ethnic minorities, the LGBT, I can't even remember what it is, lesbian, gays, bisexuals, transgender peoples. Then they go even further and they say, well, because these people have been exploited in the past, they're not just entitled to equal rights, the same as other non-oppressed people, but they are able to give or should be given extra rights to overcome past disadvantage. Now, see, what happens, of course, is that in the first thing, this is clearly contradictory. If you read the Declaration, for example, on the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which was one of the foundation documents of the United Nations, clearly is against that. If you read, for example, also on your handout, the extracts of Articles 18 and 19 of the International Covenant for the Political and Religious Rights, or Civil and Political Rights, that idea is clearly against what's set out there. It's just completely off the dial. So what you've got, for example, is that people who belong to some of these groups who have so-called oppressed these favoured groups, women, LGBT people, whatever, they are then beaten over the head and made to feel guilty for their past sins. And that's deliberate, because what they're trying to do is to keep people quiet, in this case Christians and people of faith, so that they will, we feel really guilty about that, and not only keep quiet, but either tacitly or openly acquiesce in their programs. It's a very cunning and a very, very nasty business. One of the famous examples of that was an incident in, of all places, Northern Ireland. And it came about like this. In May of 2014, the Northern Ireland Assembly voted against redefining marriage as same-sex marriage. And that decision angered many LGBT activists who blamed that defeat on Christians. 10 days after it, an LGBT campaigner walked into Ash's Bakery, which is somewhere in Northern Ireland, and that bakery makes it clear on its website that its owners are Christians and they hold certain views, and asked the proprietors to make a cake with the slogan "Support Gay Marriage" and to put on there the logo of the LGBT campaign group Queer Space. Now, the owners, who had previously declined orders that included nudity, offensive language, politely declined the request because promoting gay marriage went against their sincerely held Christian beliefs. And they knew it. This person knew it. They didn't make any secret of it. The activists then filed a complaint with the Northern Ireland Equality Commission, who sent Ash's Bakery a letter ordering them to rectify the situation within 7 days or be taken to court. The Equality and Human Rights Commission paid all the legal costs of the LGBT activist, and that created the possibility, the very real possibility, that in defending that action, Ash's Bakery could be driven out of business by the size of the legal costs, which were enormous. The publicity generated by the Northern Ireland Equality Commission taking up the case was followed by Ash's Bakery being subjected to threats, including death and arson threats, and serious damage to their bakery. So what we've got, and it's a very interesting dichotomy. We've got a society, the Northern Ireland society, which has come out of the Troubles and it's established itself as a legal democratic society, as a, operating under a constitutional monarchy, thinking that it has liberties in respect to freedom of beliefs and religion. And they think, oh, well, we can hold these beliefs, and it doesn't matter if other people disagree with it, we can still hold it. They can hold those. They can hold their ideas. But no, because these people said that they were being discriminated against, they were able to take them to court and cause all sorts of problems. Now, who was the victim here? Really, let's really cut to the chase here. Who's the victim? Was it the LGBT activist who knew that this person, Ash's Bakery, had these religious views? Huh? They made no secret of the fact. Could they have gone to O'Donoghue's Bakery down Falls Road in Belfast and got the cake from them? Of course they could have. But they were intent on creating troubles so that these people would get into trouble and suffer the consequences. Now, that's just not right, is it? On any fair standard of fairness, that's just not right. But that's what happens. It happens in Australia. I'll give you another example. The people, one of the fundamental human rights or religious rights under the freedom of religion and belief is that a person of any religion should be able to propagate their views in public. Okay? Now, there might be laws. You might have to get a permit so that you don't hold up the traffic and things like that. That's fair enough. No problems there, right? But if a person, be they a Christian, a Muslim, a Buddhist, wants to stand on the corner and preach and propagate their views, they should be able to. No problems there. However, that didn't happen because, and it happened actually in Surfers Paradise a couple of years ago. And I'll read you the report of the study of it. A street preaching team from a Christian group called Operation 513 had been regularly preaching every Friday night on the Surfers Paradise Cavill Mall. However, on the 4th of December 2015, one of their preachers was arrested. He was arrested not for being too noisy or anything to do with the manner of his preaching, but because of the content of the preaching, which included examples of sins taken directly from the New Testament. So he was preaching about sin. So at that night, at 10:30, the preacher, George Youssef, was arrested and was preaching and mentioned a list of sins, including adultery, slander, theft, greed, swindling, homosexual acts. In fact, it was taken from exactly the verse in the Bible that Israel Folau used in his post. When he was doing so, the group were accosted by a drunk. They were accosted by the drunk, who started swearing at them and calling them names. The street preachers were then approached by the police, who ordered them to move on. They didn't arrest the drunk, who was swearing at them and using abusive language and so forth, but he ordered them to move on, claiming that they were offending members of the public. Now, they then refused to do so, and as a result, they were arrested, or the preacher was arrested, for a number of public nuisance offences, disobeying a police direction and so forth and so on. Youssef, the preacher, was handcuffed and arrested for not obeying a police directive, in that the police had no clear legal basis to do so. Finally, the matter got to court. And after a year or two of legal manoeuvrings, the magistrate in Southport dismissed the case, accepting their barrister's submission that there was no case to answer for obvious reasons. You know, it doesn't take a legal a QC to realise that they weren't doing anything wrong. They complied with the laws, and in fact, they were the victim rather than the person who it was claimed they were offending. That's an actual case, by the way. There are other things that, and I note the time. There's a very interesting one, or a number of things that have arisen. You remember last year, the year before, there was the same-sex marriage debate.
Debate.
I use the term loosely. And there was very, how shall I put this delicately? There was very blatant pressure put on Christian groups who were opposing this, as they're entitled to do, as anybody's entitled to do in so-called in our society, a liberal democratic society, to put their views as long as there's no illegality and so forth involved. And there's no inciting to violence. However, listen to this one, and this is true. This is I'm not making this up, by the way. These are actual reported cases. LGBT activist and TV star Benjamin Law, I don't know the gentleman, he mused online on some post or whatever it's called about raping, yes, you heard right, raping MPs opposed to same-sex marriage. You did hear right, raping. It goes on. It generated almost 300 likes and many replies, including one that read, "Start with Andrew Hastie." Now, Andrew Hastie is the Liberal MP for Canning in Western Australia, and he's recently been on the news because he's refused to recant or repent to the Chinese Communist government for making some disparaging remarks about the human rights record. You know the guy I'm talking about. He's the head of the Intelligence Commission, Committee of the Federal Parliament, the House of Representatives. It said, "Start with Andrew Hastie." Mr. Law then tweeted a response indicating that he would like to do this, that is, rape Andrew Hastie. Now, that's just disgusting. It's also illegal because it's presumably inciting somebody to commit violence of a, you know, pretty high order. It goes on. Glenn Waverley Anglican Church in Melbourne, during this debate, was sprayed with threatening graffiti saying, "Vote yes, bash bigots," as well as an equal sign between the Christian cross equals the Nazi swastika. It goes on. Two women interrupted a Coalition for Marriage event in Melbourne, holding up a banner encouraging people to burn churches. A same-sex marriage abuser, a supporter, was videoed hurling obscene abuse at a man sticking "It's okay to vote no" signs at King George's Road at Wylie Park. Now, I don't know where that is. I think it's in Melbourne. But he was putting this thing, and I think that was captured actually on TV. This guy was, you know, banging "vote no" to, as he's quite entitled to do, and she gives him the most vile broadside, including that he's a bigot and he should be, you know, bang, 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 you can imagine. And nothing happens. Nothing happens. A same-sex marriage supporter was captured on video in an expletive-ridden rant against a Vote No campaigner in Sydney. This is all during the recent same-sex marriage debate. Another one. This is a beauty. The headquarters of the Australian Christian Lobby was targeted several times in December 2017. It was rammed by a vehicle filled with explosives, driven by an LGBT activist who said he wanted to destroy the Australian Christian Lobby while he committed suicide. It goes on. An LGBT activist encouraged supporters of same-sex marriage to post noxious substances to the ACL. Police were called in after two suspicious packages containing white powder, presumably anthrax or some of these, you know, the ones that get posted to government offices in various times, were found containing white powder, and the building had to be evacuated, and it was also pelted with eggs. Corey Bernardi, who is well known, as you know, one of the members of the Australian Conservative Party and a senator for South Australia, they vandalised his office in Adelaide, menaced his children and his children's school after he raised concerns about the same Safe Schools program. Now, I could go on and on and on, but I think you get the drift, right? Now, I've got no problems, as I said. I have no problems at all with people protesting, putting forward their views, putting them forward forcefully if necessary, putting them forward to convince others of the truth of what they say, because we have the same right. But it seems to be that Christians and other people of faith who are doing it the right way get beaten about by people who don't stick to the rules and who, it seems, they just float away and never get anything happen to them. That, to me, that I just can't get my head around that, and I'm sure most of you can't either. I will not go any further because it is 25 past eight and I'm conscious of the time. I would like to finish with one other, which I think is a ripper, a real ripper, and that is the rise and promotion of what I call spurious quasi-rights, such as the right not to be offended by the beliefs and ideas of others. Okay, now you think about that for a while. Okay, I am a Christian. If I want to say and talk to people, say it at university or at the supermarket or down the pub if I am so that way inclined, because it's a fruitful area for evangelism apart from meeting people. Apart from that, forget that bit. Scratch that bit. But if I go down there and somebody is offended by what I say, perfectly legitimate. There's one guy at university in Queensland who was hauled up before the university board and threatened with exclusion because he offered to pray for somebody who was going through a mental health crisis. You shake your head in disbelief, don't you? So we are supposed to be, as Christians and people of faith, cowed by and brought into line and beaten into silence by this so-called quasi-right of a person not to be offended by us sharing our beliefs. It's just ridiculous, isn't it? Whatever happened to somebody saying, well, hey, mate, you know, take a hike, I'm not interested. You know? That's the way it always used to be. Yeah. You've been reading my mail. I'll read you what the next part of my this thing said. What about our right to be offended by their being offended by our beliefs and ideas? What about our belief to be... What's the disciple saying? Well, I'm offended by your being offended. But that's, of course, you know, that's just swept away. It's just ridiculous. But these are the kind of things which form the backdrop to the present debate on religious freedom. Now, I'll give you... I won't go any further because Bill's getting tetchy there. But it's not 8:30 yet, Bill. So no.
Question time.
Pardon?
Question time.
Oh, question time. Okay. But I'll give you one very quick point of concern and a look in to next time's talk. It's been touted by the government, the Australian government, that there is before the House a religious freedom bill. No, there's not. There is before the House a bill called the Religious Discrimination Bill. Religious freedom and religious, or a bill against religious discrimination, is an animal of a whole different colour and species. And that's what we're going to talk about next week. Questions? Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for this presentation from North Pine Baptist Church. For more information and to connect with us, visit npbc.org.au.